Welcome to Podskiwiwi. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham.
Mike, I have a question for you. Do you know where you were on July 10th in 1993?
Hell no.
I do. Thanks to my brother, who was parsing through some of our grandfather's old things, I know exactly where I was on that day. I was at the Hamilton Tiger Cats versus Sacramento Gold Miners game at Ivor Wynne Stadium with my grandfather. My brother was rifling through some of my grandfather's old things, and he found two ticket stubs for that game in a box of hockey cards. One was an adult ticket, the other was a kid's ticket. The adult ticket, $20. The kid's ticket, $10. It was in section 7 of old Ivor Wynne Stadium, which I believe was around midfield. I think we're in row 39, if I remember correctly, looking at tickets. So we're pretty high up there, but we're about midfield. Two tickets at midfield for $30. That's pretty dope. I guess it's kind of a good thing my grandfather was a bit of a hoarder, eh? Because otherwise I would not have this piece of memorabilia, which I'm now going to keep. 25 years ago in July, I knew exactly where I was, and I was watching the Gold Miners blast from the past, eh?
Very much so, and that era of Canadian football is looked back upon as, kind of a down era. But to me, like any of the American expansion memorabilia you can get, I'm down for it because I just think it's so weird but so cool that we had, five or six American teams in the CFL at one point. I think a total of 13 teams in the CFL between 93 and 95, which is just, if you think about it now, I don't think we'll ever get to that number again. It's just very strange.
Yeah, it was a strange time. Not I wouldn't say a forgotten time in the league's history, because I think a lot of people, especially recently, I feel like as people our age start becoming older adults, I hesitate to say middle age, because I don't think people in their mid-30s are middle age. But as we get a little older, we reminisce on when we were children and teenagers. And I was 11 years old in '93. I was 13 in '95. Like, so during that era, I was just coming into my teen years. Like, it's nostalgia, essentially. And we've seen sort of a rebirth. We've seen some t-shirts come out. We like it feels like people are starting, maybe because the league sort of came out, like this was during a pretty dark time for the league, as everyone knows. I think since the league's kind of on more solid footing now, we can look back on this and kind of go, man, like what a weird time.
Yeah, absolutely. And the Gold Miners were one of my favorite American teams of that time. I just loved their uniforms, their helmets, everything about them was really, really cool. I mean, there was some really nice uniforms in the American expansions, but that was by far my favorite.
So obviously this sent me down the rabbit hole of, okay, what happened in this game? What happened in this season? So here's some facts about the 1993 season. So this game in particular, our Ticats won 30 to 14. It was their home opener and their season opener that year. It was the second game for Sacramento after they played their first game against the Ottawa Rough Riders, which is that's two Ottawa teams ago, crazy to think. That season, our Ticats, they started 3-0. And then proceeded to lose six straight. And then for the rest of the season, kind of alternated wins with losses until they finished on a three-game losing streak. And they finished the season at 6-12. But Mike, that 6-12 record was good for second place in the East Division because the
Ouch.
Rough Riders, yeah, ouch indeed. The Ottawa Rough Riders finished 4-14, and the Toronto Argonauts finished 3-15. The Args were 3-15 2 years removed from that 91 team that went, I think, 15-3 and won the Grey Cup. It's like the Argos never are able to sort of sustain success, but the Ticats finished second. They host the East semifinal against the Ottawa Rough Riders because, despite how bad both these teams were, there was no crossover back in the day. They beat the Rough Riders in the East semi 21-10 before falling to the 14-4 and East winning Winnipeg Blue Bombers 20-19 in the East final. The Ticats, who were 6-12, Mike, came within 2 points of going to the Grey Cup in 1993. Could you imagine if a 6-12 team got to the Grey Cup in 2018, how angry people would be?
Yeah, it makes you appreciate that they brought in the crossover because, teams that have 6-12 or 4-14 records just should not be in the playoffs. And I'm glad we don't see that anymore, that's for sure. I believe that was a Matt Dunnigan-led Winnipeg Blue Bombers team, if
You
I'm
are
correct.
correct. You are absolutely
Yes.
correct. Want some more fun facts about 1993?
I do.
Okay, so the Sacramento Gold Miners, who the Ticats played in this game that I went to see, they also finished 6-12, but they were in the West Division, so they finished in last place. So last place in the West would have got you second in the East. The West that year saw Calgary finish 15-3, Edmonton 12-6, Saskatchewan 11-7, and BC at 10-8. There was no crossover, as I mentioned before, but the league's playoffs was really kind of neat. The East was the same as we have now. Winnipeg got the bye. Hamilton, Ottawa played in the semifinal. Winner went to Winnipeg. But the West had four teams make the playoffs. There were two semifinal games. Calgary played BC and Edmonton played Saskatchewan. Could you imagine no team in the West this year or in any of the previous years where Calgary's won 15 games not getting a bye into the division finals? Could you imagine what people on Twitter would say if that happened?
It would be pretty explosive. There'd be a lot of foul language flying around, I assume. We're just lucky that in 1993 there was no Twitter or, barely an internet, really.
Yeah, Al Gore, I don't think it invented the internet, or at least it wasn't being used as ubiquitous as it is
Was it
today.
Al Gore?
Yeah, that's what Al Gore. You ever heard that famous thing about Al Gore saying he invented the internet? It had to do with allowing military funds. So when he said it, not to get too political, but it's something about, like, he said in an interview, like, I think it was on Larry King. He said he was influential in creating the internet because he gave the American military the money in order to do, like, what became the like to create what became the internet, like, internally. So, that's kind of been a, running
Good
joke.
old man bear pig.
Yeah. Oh, Man Bear Pig, one of my favorite episodes of South Park. I used to have, when I first got on Facebook, my profile picture was of the Man Bear Pig, and I would literally walk around to people and I would say Gwone, because as he knows,
Oh.
that's what the Man Bear Pig says.
Yep,
Oh my
that's
God,
yep.
dude,
We'll
we're
find one in captivity when you come down to Edmonton.
Oh,
That's
we'll go man bear pig hunting in
roaming
Edmonton.
the yeah, they're roaming in the alleyways. It's very scary, but
We'll
we'll try
take
to
one down.
capture one.
We'll take one
Yeah.
down. So that 93 season would see Edmonton go on to win the Grey Cup over Winnipeg. Doug
Which
Flutie.
I was at, which I was at,
You were at that
93
one?
Grey Cup in Calgary.
Yep.
Yep. Yep. I
Wow.
was there.
So I was at the first Ticat game of the year. You were at the very last game of the year. Pretty interesting symmetry there. Doug Flutie was named MOP, and Mike O'Shea was named Rookie of the Year for the Ticats. So basically, Mike, when I read all this, my summation of this is the Bombers didn't win a Grey Cup, a superior Calgary team choked in the playoffs, and the East was vastly inferior to the West. Some things never change, eh?
I know it's just year after year, go all the way back to 93 and it's still the same stuff. I just don't know when the East will get their act together, Josh.
I don't know either. Maybe this year we'll see Calgary maybe not choke in the playoffs, and who knows, maybe the Bombers can actually win a Grey Cup. But 25 years ago to today, not much changes in the Canadian Football League. So it might be fun, and it was fun to kind of talk about the past, Mike, but I guess we kind of have to talk about this game that happened on Saturday. I'm going to start here, though, with the good, the silver lining of this. Ticat fans don't have to cheer for the Argos this week.
Yeah, that's to me that's a small consolation prize, but to be honest, I don't think the Red Blacks would be losing to the Argonauts if this game mattered to them anyways, but it would have been nice to have some hope going into this weekend.
Indeed. The reason that we Ticat fans do not have to set aside centuries of animosity towards the Argos is because the Ticats lost rather handily, 30-13, to the Ottawa Red Blacks, and thus handed the East Division title to Ottawa in the process. Mike, the weather for this game was miserable. The play on the field was miserable. This was awful, terrible, whatever adjective for bad you can use to describe it, that was this game. It was the worst.
Yeah, it was an ugly game to watch. The Ticats, from the very start were not clicking, especially on offense. Their defense played pretty well in the first half, especially that first quarter. But the offense was just not ready to play at all.
Yeah, so let's start with the offense. They sucked. And I look at it, and what was the big difference between this team that couldn't score a touchdown this week versus the team that had a big lead going into halftime last week, and that's no Brandon Banks. Mazzoli never, I don't think, really ever found a rhythm with his receivers or found a rhythm in the offense. We saw a bunch of receivers drop passes in this one. The run game was pretty stagnant in this one. It just seems that without Brandon Banks, this offense can't produce.
No, he's definitely the straw that stirs the drink. I mean, you can see the difference when Brandon Banks isn't out there. We saw the difference when he went down with an injury for a couple weeks in the season, and we saw it last game for sure. There just doesn't seem to be any cohesion between the quarterback and the receivers. And you can't really blame them because, I mean, we have a whole receiving core that is down with injury, out for the year. You guys know who they are. They're all potentially 1,000-yard receivers in the season, and they're not on this team right now. They're not on the field, so that's gonna be a hard obstacle to get over. They're gonna have to really start clicking in practice, really start working on that connection between Mazzoli and the receivers. Because if they put out another effort like this in the playoffs, we're gonna be one and done.
Yeah, like if you look at the numbers, the top receiver for this team was Mike Jones. Six
Yeah, that's
catches for
scary.
56
That's
yards.
scary.
That's
Yeah.
very, very scary. Although I like the fact that, and it makes sense that he's kind of leaning on a guy who's been with him all season. But yeah, when Mike Jones is your leading receiver, that's, it's happened a couple times this season. I think he was the top receiver against Calgary in week one. I think he had the most receiving yards against BC a few weeks ago in the, in punt gate. Or single gate, whatever you want to call it. But more often than not, you don't want Mike Jones being your leading receiver. And to only lead the team with 56 receiving yards, like that's not going to get it done. Terrell Sinkfield, though, this was his first game in. He was just behind Jones, six catches for 55 yards. I felt like as the game sort of started to get going and he started to get more into it, I feel like he started to play a little better. This is the one piece of optimism I take offensively is that once Sinkfield, he's now got his feet wet, both literally and figuratively. It was a torrential downpour at that game on Saturday. Look, losing Banks still sucks, and I think this team is hurt immensely by it. But I think I saw some things out of Sinkfield that, like, he could have had a touchdown pass in this one if he didn't slip. Like, he had a pretty decent game for a guy who hasn't played a CFL game in almost 2 years and has been playing defensive back for the last 2 seasons in the NFL. Like, I don't know. I think there's some things with Sinkfield that you can kind of point to and go, okay, once he kind of gets maybe this next week against Montreal, and then maybe he starts to really get take like round into form come playoff time. I don't know. I don't think all hope is lost offensively. It just I feel like it's going to take a little while to get Sinkfield in there, and I think once it does, the offense could be a little bit better.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that he got better as the game went along. He did take a pretty stupid penalty earlier on in the game. He didn't show much, in the second quarter, but he had a big play in the second half, which I was impressed with. And there's potential there. Obviously, we know Terrell Sinkfield is a gamer. Obviously, we know there's tons of talent there. He just has to get on the right page as Jeremiah Mazzoli, and you never know. Maybe he can really contribute to this team in the playoffs.
We got to talk about the defense too because it came out an hour before the game that Delvin Bro wasn't going to play, and I sent out a tweet that said, "Well, silver lining, just like I said earlier, Ticats fans won't have to cheer for the Argos next week." I didn't without Banks on offense, without Bro on defense. How is this team going to compete? And we saw it on the field; they couldn't compete. Trevor Harris, who I think has put together a pretty solid back half of the season, at least a solid last 6 quarters against Ticats. He lit Hamilton up in this one. Deontay Spencer looked like the second coming of Earl Winfield. We saw trick plays in this game. The third and short touchdown pass from Dominic Davis to Greg Ellingson. It just seems without Bro, man, that this team kind of can't really stop anyone. It's like they're so used to having him there that when he's not there, everyone else tries to do a little bit too much to compensate. And well, the proof's in the pudding. They got absolutely hammered defensively by an Ottawa offense that looked like it just couldn't be stopped.
Absolutely torched on at least three very long passes. You can name the guys in the secondary that didn't have a good game. Richard Leonard got burned on a TD pass. Jamar Roll was the guy that was supposed to be covering Ellingson on that 3rd and 1 for a TD pass. Kyle Brooks got burned, and then Mike Daly got burned on a long TD pass. So you're right. Without Bro back there, it seems like the guys in the secondary just forgot how to cover.
Yeah, it just feels like I said, they're trying to do too much. Like they know with Bro out there, and we've said this so many times that people are probably sick of hearing it. We know that's taken care of. Who's ever on that boundary side receiver, no one has to worry, and that frees up the other four guys to kind of be able to. They have less on their plate. Without Bro out there, man, it was feast or famine. I think they played all right early on, but you're right. Big plays absolutely doom this secondary and doom this defense, and I think a lot of that had to do with Bro being out of there.
Yeah, it was unfortunate to see the secondary get picked apart like that. It's been, one of our strong suits this whole season, and take one guy out, one very important guy out, and they look mediocre at best. So that was disconcerting.
All right, there's not a ton to like about this game, Mike, but why don't you tell the good people who are listening to this miserable show this week something about this game that you actually liked?
Well, the run defense was pretty damn good. We touched on the secondary. They were terrible, but they really stuffed the run. And I know that Powell wasn't in this game. He was taken out because they wanted to give him rest, which I found odd. They must have a lot of confidence coming into this game, and rightfully so, I guess. But Moses Madu is a an exceptional running back, to fill in for William Powell. You can get the job done. But they held him to 11 carries for only 26 yards. And that's about it for rushing for the Ottawa Redblacks. I mean, Dominic Davis had 3 carries for 5 yards. Galanders had 1 carry for 3 yards. And RJ Harris had 1 carry for -1 yards. So it's strange. Like, the secondary has been our strength. The run defense has been questionable. Not all season, but in certain games, it's been really bad. And it seemed to switch roles here. The run defense was really good, and the secondary was really bad.
And it's also strange because usually in a game where you win by 3 scores, you expect those rushing numbers to be a little bit higher. Like to see, what was it, 15 carries, 16 carries in total? Like Ottawa only had 30, 31 pass plays, so it's not like they had a ton of plays in general. But normally when you see a team win 30-13, even if the numbers stat-wise rushing aren't great, you usually see 20-something carries because at the end of the game, they're pounding the rock to run the clock out, and that just didn't happen. It was maybe Ottawa took advantage of the secondary and the missing Bro, so that's they emphasized the pass game. Either way, though, it was kind of an interesting sort of role reversal, if you will. And speaking of role reversals, Mike, the one thing from this game that I liked is the kicker. And this week, the kicker gets his name back. Because for the first time in almost 2 months, Liram Hirahalu did not get flagged for an illegal kick. Hallelujah. He also went 4 for 4 on field goals. He was the only member of the Ticats to score this week. And while that is depressing, almost as depressing as Mike Jones being the team's leading receiver, it's worthy of a shout-out in the like section because he had a fairly decent game. There was one shank punt that nearly went out of bounds and would have resulted in him not having his name this week, but
Keep
out
the
of all the
streak
players,
alive. Should have kept the streak alive, Josh.
but he didn't, and he had a pretty good
Yeah.
game. And for that, not only does he get his name back, but he gets a shout in the like section. It was a nice bounce back performance from him.
Absolutely. I believe he was 4 for 4 in field goals.
Yep,
And he had that one field goal against the wind. It was 40 some
the
yards.
one that clanked off the
Just
crossbar.
squeaked in. That was a hell of a kick from him. So yeah, thumbs up to the kicker. I mean, Liram Haralahu. Good for him.
And that made it 21-13, and you're thinking, okay, they're down by 8. They get that. And you should have seen the sideline and the players. That gave them a big boost. They're thinking, okay, maybe the second half they'll bring this back. And then fart noise. The second half absolutely sucks. So let's get into the many things that we disliked about this. You touched on it a little bit earlier, but you can go back into it. The secondary, Mike, just garbage.
Yeah, the secondary, it seems like everybody took turns getting burnt by the Ottawa Redblacks receivers. I mean, they couldn't cover anybody out there. The Redblacks just moved the bodies through the air. Trevor Harris was 23 of 30. I mean, that's a ridiculous percentage, 76.7, 267 yards, which isn't too, it's not crazy passing yards, but the 3 TDs on 3 long touchdown passes, and then Dominic Davis had one as well. So yeah, the secondary was, I'd hate to say it, but the secondary was trash this game. They just got torched, and you got to wonder if there's going to be any replacements in the secondary. I don't think they'll do that this late in the season. They'll probably just wait till Breaux comes back, and then everything will hopefully go back to normal. But like I mentioned, the people that got burned on long touchdowns, I mean, Roll, Leonard, Brooks, Daly, they all did not have good games.
No, and it's all the starters. Those are the f that wasn't Josh Johnson replaced Delvin Bro in this one, and that's not the guy you mentioned that got beat. So it's the guys who have been in there week in, week out that took the hit this week, and they got one more week before it's playoff time. And BC is coming in here. The last time these two teams played here, Hamilton wrecked shop, but I doubt there's going to be any dancing on the logo. There's going to be no Brandon Banks, and Travis Lule is going to be behind center. This is going to be a different BC Lions team than we saw a few weeks ago. This secondary's got to get its act together, or guys like Devere Posey, who looks like he's finally rounding into form, guys like Shaq Johnson, guys like Brian Burnham, they're going to eat this team's lunch. And like you said earlier, this Ticats team's going to be one and done. It's something they got to get fixed, and it's very late in the season, so I agree with you. I don't think we're going to see very many changes to personnel, but there's a lot of guys got to look in the mirror and take fault with how they played in this one.
Yeah, absolutely. And my other dislike is Jeremiah Mazzoli. I know all the injuries to the receiving core, but he just did not have a good game. 25 for 48, 52% passing, two interceptions, 243 yards through the air. I mean, it was ugly for him. There was no connection between him and the receivers. Even the guys that have been in the offense this whole season, I mean, Tasker didn't do much. Mike Jones led the team in passing, I mean receiving. So it was pretty ugly out there for the quarterback this game, especially that late interception, which was just a terrible decision on his part.
The one in the end zone.
Yes.
Yeah, it was. This is another case I feel like of a guy trying to do too much. Like they're down, they need a play, and he reverted back to some terrible decision makings that he's made early in the year. Now this to me is an anomaly game for Mazzoli. Like we've seen him play so well, especially since Labor Day, that you kind of give him this one. Like this was a bad game for everybody on this team. That's not excusing his poor play. He's the guy that's gotta build this up and be the leader. But everyone stunk in this one. I actually got, of course, because this is what usually happens when Mazzoli plays a bad game. I get inundated with he's not any good. He shouldn't be MOP. Yada yada yada. That happened again after this one, and it's one bad game. It's one bad game after a run of like five or six really good ones. That does not scuttle a guy's MOP candidacy. And we've seen every mate, like this has got to be the year where maybe outside of the Solomon El-Mimian year where there was no one really on offense that you could kind of point to and go, that guy's lit the league on fire. This has got to be the most crowded, unpredictable MOP race there is, because you can point at every single guy in the running, from Mike Riley to Bo Levi Mitchell to Mazzoli to guys like Adam Big Hill to anyone who, I don't know who Ottawa's MOP is going to be, Brad Sinopoli maybe, and you can find fault in their game, right? Like there's always, you can point to, well, Edmonton's not making the playoffs. Mitchell has not played well down the stretch, and Calgary's lost three in a row, and he's had some games over the years where he didn't play well. Mazzoli's had an up and down season where he gets really streaky. He plays great for 6 weeks and then has two clunkers. Like no player that you would consider in the MOP conversation other than injured guys like Banks are out of this race. And I'm just sick and tired of every time Mazzoli plays poorly, you have to hear about how he's not that good. What's it going to take for this guy? And again, I'm not trying to cape for him in this game. He was awful. What's it going to take for this guy to finally get sort of that respect of, like Trevor Harris plays a bad game, and if you insult him, you get Red Blacks fans jumping down your throat, or you get his brother from a few years ago
I
jumping down our
forgot about
throats. You know what I mean? Like, what's it going to
Yeah.
take for Mazzoli, who's for the most part this season played exceptionally well, to finally kind of get the benefit of the doubt?
To be fair, I think that Red Blacks fans really jump on Harris when he's not playing well. I mean, they're the quickest fans to start booing their own team, I
That's true.
find.
That is true.
Either Ottawa and Winnipeg, they're close. Now, Winnipeg, I can kind of understand. I mean, it's been a while since they won a championship. They've been through a lot with the Blue Bombers, but those two fan bases really come out and boo quickly. But I don't know, man. It just seems like people don't like Mazzoli for whatever reason. I don't know why. Like, you look at his numbers this season. Obviously, we'd like to have a better record, but football's a team game. It's just not one player. And those certain fans, every time they lose, even if Mazzoli played good and they lost, they would still blame it on Mazzoli. I just can't put my finger on the reason why there's so much hatred, it seems, for Mr. Mazzoli.
Yeah, and let's talk about some of the things about this game I dislike because it has to do with Mazzoli as well. And this is his receivers doing him absolutely no favors. There were so many drops in this game, Mike. I saw Justin Buren drop at least three in the first half alone. I stopped counting after that one. Marque McDaniel had one on a really nice pass by Mazzoli, which threaded, like, McDaniel's in between two defenders, and Mazzoli threads the pass. It hits McDaniel right in the hand, falls on the turf. This team has its best player, and I think it's fair to say that Brandon Banks is the best player, who was a receiver, is out of this game, is out for the rest of the season. And that's when I think other players have to step up and make plays. Dropping passes, especially ones that hit you right in the hands, Mike, to me, that is the exact opposite of making plays. Mazzoli did not play well in this game. His receivers did him no favors by dropping so many passes.
Yeah, we're not Calgary. We have to take advantage of every opportunity we have because, you watch the Stampeders and they play poorly on offense and they seem to squeak out wins. We're not them. We have to take advantage of, yeah, they have to catch the damn ball and we have to make first downs. We have to take advantage of every single opportunity and they just kind of let down Mazzoli in this game a couple times.
Yeah, and that, again, he had some errant throws. Those interceptions were inexcusable. He's not to blame for this as well. But this was a total team effort in its collapse. The other thing I want to talk about, and this has kind of been a trend with Brandon Banks out of the lineup, is the lack of touchdown production. Brandon Banks has missed three games this year. He will miss at least two more because that's the Ticats only have two more on their schedule guaranteed. In all three of those games, the Ticats have lost. And they have failed to find the end zone in two of them. To me, Mike, that is a troubling trend that cannot continue, or else this season for the Ticats will not continue beyond Remembrance Day.
We're going back to the start of the season where we couldn't find the end zone to save our lives, it seemed. So they cannot be retreading that bad habit because you have to put up touchdowns. You can't just keep kicking threes. And they were in the red zone a couple times. Early in the game, I remember they were in the red zone. I believe it was 8-1 at that time. You score a touchdown there. I could be incorrect on the exact score,
Nope,
but you
I think
score a
you're right.
touchdown there. Okay. And you score a touchdown there, boom, we're tied. They had to kick a field goal from within the 10-yard line, I believe. And that's just, you have to punch it in when you're that close.
Yeah, it's that's just it, man. Touchdowns win games, field goals don't lose you games, but when you're in a battle for your lives, you gotta find a way to get that extra gear. Now, like I said earlier, there was the one touchdown that would have been a gimme had Terrell Singfield not fallen, but when a team's not playing well, those are the things that kind of go against them.
Yeah, and the rushing game hasn't been very good lately. I know Alex Green had 9 carries for 76 yards, but that was mostly on that 36-yard run early in the game. I believe it was the same drive where they kicked that field goal.
Yep, I think you're right.
But the offensive line has to open up some holes for Green or whoever may be back there because we have to start leaning on this run game more than we have this season because obviously our weapons are not in the receiving game.
Well, and the crazy thing is when this whole Mazzoli thing, when I keep getting tweets from Red Blacks fans about how Mazzoli stinks and shouldn't be MOP, someone mentioned a one-dimensional offense. So I went and started looking up some stats. And the Ticats are third in the league in passing yards and third in the league in rushing yards. So they have been pretty successful. That's what you call balanced offense, as far as I'm concerned. When you're third in the league in both categories, that's a pretty good balance when I look at it. They have the ability to run the football. We've seen how many guys in this team, three, I think, go for over 100 yards and another guy go for over 90. Like, the Ticats can run the football. Even Alex Green, like you said, 9 carries, 76 yards, 8.4 yard average. Yes, you're right. 36 yards on one carry kind of eats into that a lot, but still, this team has the ability to run the football. This is not the Ken Austin teams where they would run it three times a game, they'd get 7 yards, then they just abandoned it
Give up.
completely. This is a team that has proven that they will stick to the run. And this game is obviously a little bit difficult. They were down so big that you kind of have to throw it. But Hamilton does and can run the football. And I think it is something that now, with Banks out of the lineup for good and all those other receivers out of the lineup, it's something they really need to lean on.
Yeah, 9 carries isn't enough for Alex Green, and I know they were down early, but the weather, it should have been more of an emphasis to run the ball more.
So time for the Podsky Player of the Week, Mike. And usually when we have a game this bad, we don't tend to name anyone our Player of the Week. We've had that a few times this year where the Ticats have just stunk so badly that we've decided to just skip this altogether. But we were able to find that one player who actually gave us some good against the Red Blacks. And for that, he is our Podsky Player of the Week for this week. And Mike, why don't you tell everyone who that is?
Well, surprise, surprise, it's Mr. Lirim Harilahu. He went 4 for 4 on field goals, a long of 43, but that was a longer kick than 43 going into the wind like that. I'd say he had 10 yards that kick based on the wind. So perfect on field goals. His punting average was 48.1, is nothing to sneeze at. Hit a long of 69 yards. I'm sure
Wind
that
aided.
one came with the wind. But overall, a really good game for Harilahu, and he is the Podsky Player of the Week.
So not only does he get his name back, he gets his first Podsky Player of the Week award. So good for him. Good for him. All right, Mike, Ticats news is not very plentiful this week, but there was a big story. Woo indeed. The Nature Boy himself, Ric Flair. This is nuts, man. The Ticats posted a video of the 16-time world heavyweight champion, the styling and profiling, limousine riding, jet flying son of a gun. The Nature Boy Ric Flair made a video of himself in a custom
Yeah, shoes, cast mold, make your house.
and custom Ticats jersey, a number 16 for the World Championships, with Flair written on the back. He cuts a classic Ric Flair promo, and this all leads to apparently Ric Flair is going to be gracing us with his presence at the East semifinal when the Ticats play the BC Lions. Mike, I'm speechless, man. I never saw this coming. There was a picture that floated around before the Ticats game this week that Connor McGuff put on his Instagram of Ric Flair. I thought it was just a video of like Flair kind of hyping up the team or whatever. I saw the 16 jersey. Brandon Banks is a Carolina guy. Figured maybe there was a connection there. I didn't know what it was about, but to see Ric Flair talking about the Ticats, talking about Angelo Mosca, talking about coming to the game, like this is so surreal.
Yeah, it's very strange. I never thought I'd see Ric Flair wearing a Tigercats jersey talking up the team, but it's pretty neat. Both of us are wrestling fans, and Ric Flair is obviously one of the greatest to ever step in the ring. So to have him behind our backs is pretty cool. Now I know that obviously he's probably being paid. Ric Flair is kind of notorious for, showing up at sporting events, whatever team it may be. If the money's right, he will support. But either way, don't worry about that fact. Just kind of soak it in. It's nice to see the 16-time world champion wearing a Tigercats jersey.
It's just fun, man. Like,
Yeah, it's fun. Yeah.
it's silly, it's meaningless, it's fun. And like, that's sports, man. Like, sports is supposed to be fun. This is not something we have to debate about. Like you said, like, yeah, he's getting paid to do this. He probably had a, they probably told him it's the Hamilton Tiger Cats, blah, blah, blah. Like, whatever, man. Like, it's just fun. Let's have fun with this. That's what this is all about. And have you heard the song Ric Flair Drip?
I don't believe so. I remember I saw a video of him. It was his wedding that didn't happen too long ago, but he came out to that song, Ric Flair Drip. It's probably like his 12th wedding or something, but yeah, I haven't heard it in length, but
Okay, but
I'm sure
anyway,
it's a beauty.
it's a song. He's in it. I want to say it's Migos, the Atlanta rap group. They're cool with the young kids, as I do my old man talking. But come on, man. If the team doesn't come out to either that or Flair's classic entrance theme, what are we even doing here?
Yeah, I think that there's got to be some kind of hype package they'll put
Has to
up
be.
on the big screen with Ric Flair doing his woos and all that good stuff. So, if it hypes up the team, maybe he'll even give a speech in the locker room. Like, you never know. Maybe him and Mosca could get in there and hype up the team before the game. Like, how could you not be more hyped up if you get a pregame speech from Ric Flair? I mean, come on.
Ric Flair doing the Oski Wee Wee pregame.
Yeah, Oski woo woo. Oski
Oh,
woo woo.
Oski Woo Woo. Oh, Mike, If I wasn't afraid of being sued by Ric Flair because we know he likes the money, that would be a t-shirt. Oh my God, that was too good.
That'd be an
So
awesome t-shirt. I don't think we could get sued for that. Like, if we put an image of him wearing the Ticats jerseys and said Oski woo woo, unless he's trademark woo.
mean, it's Ric Flair. Would you be surprised if he did?
No, not at all. Not one bit.
Okay, so as fun as that is, let's move on and talk about some CFL news, Mike. And here's the point in the show where we get to once again talk maritime expansion, because some news came out this week that seemed to move that process even further forward. The news was that the Maritime Football Limited Group is trying to secure some land at Shannon Park for a 24,000-seat stadium that is estimated to cost between $170 and $190 million. Now, I think everyone who listens to our show has been following this. Everyone who listens to the show really wants this to happen. But Mike, you are the resident skeptic when it comes to maritime expansion. But you have to admit, this is as far down the rabbit hole as we have gone in our, maybe not our lifetime, but in our known
Probably.
fandom of the CFL. So you have to be at least somewhat optimistic that this could happen, or were you, are you going to continue your negative Nancy gimmick here and tell us why the rest of us are fools for getting amped about this?
Well, listen, it's very, you're right. We're as close as we've ever been in our lifetime. I believe this is closer than what happened in 1982, I believe, which is before my birth, but not yours.
Not mine.
But I'm a skeptic until I see that the government is behind this, because the owners aren't paying for it with their own money, and the government has said in the past that they don't want to put any of their money into it either. So I'm still kind of confused at where this 170 to 190 million dollars is going to come from. And listen, I don't live in the Maritimes anymore, and I even if I did, I wouldn't have a problem with government money going towards this. I think you give them, if they do put money behind it, you give them a couple Grey Cups in 10 years. I don't think anyone would have a problem with that. Yeah, the city would make a ton of money off Grey Cups. I know people would be thrilled. They would flock to the Maritimes to watch a Grey Cup, just a party in the Maritimes during Grey Cup week. I think it'd be a massive success. I think they could make most of that money back, but they don't like spending money out there for anything, really. They're set in the 1950s, it seems, the 1960s. They don't seem to want to get ahead. That's why everyone leaves the Maritimes once they're 20, in their 20s, because there's nothing there. So if they want to continue to be a nothing province and a nothing part of the country, then they can do that. And I'm not saying that the CFL team, oh, then now you're in the big time, but you could add things to it. You know, maybe you get an MLS team, maybe one of the CPL or whatever, that Canadian Premier League that's trying to start up. You know, you add concerts. It doesn't have to be just a CFL stadium. So I'm not fully there yet, but I'm not gonna, you know, take a poo on the whole idea either.
I get where you're coming from, man. Where's the money? Like, that's what this all boils down to. It's great to have these plans. It's great to have a site picked out. But until we know where the money's coming from and that the money's there, it does kind of, that's a pretty big thing hanging around that we don't have an answer to. So, but it just feels like this is, they're
It's moving
really,
along.
it's moving along. It's very, it's been an open process. Like, the CFL hasn't hid about wanting this. There's an ownership group that hasn't hid about wanting this. This is the most like CFL out east has always been a fan-driven thing. Man, we should get a 10th team. Man, we should get a 10th team. Man, they should put a team in Halifax. Okay, we'll do a couple games out there. And oh, well, they were good, but they weren't great. And there was a lot of traveling fans. And is this sustainable? And yada yada yada. And it's always been a fan-driven thing. This is the first time that it feels real, and we've said this kind of along the entire process. But it's new information. It's kind of neat to think of, like, I don't know the area very well at all, really, so I don't know where this is, what this looks like. But the idea that they have a location picked out, like, it just feels like this is a steaming locomotive that's just, I just wish we knew where the money was coming from, I guess is what I'm trying to get at here, because if once we get that solved, I think this is a slam dunk.
Oh yeah, like that's the only obstacle. Like, you know,
Which
the
is still a pretty
CFL's
big obstacle.
Oh, it's a huge obstacle. It's the number
Maybe the
one obstacle.
biggest.
Yeah, for sure. But the CFL's behind it. You know, there is interest from Halifax. You know, we'll see. We'll see what happens.
I mean, they say they want to be up and running by 2021, so I don't know.
That would be
Once
great.
I think I'll believe this is real, and we can really start getting excited about it when a shovel's in the ground, right? Like, land's purchased. This is where we're building the stadium. They've got their franchise. We're coming. Like, there was talk with this news that if this all goes well, they'll start a season ticket drive in November. So, I mean, I know that that doesn't mean much because we had a season ticket drive here in Hamilton for the was the, I think it was either the Penguins or the Predators that were moving to Hamilton. I think it was the Predators that were moving to Hamilton. And then that never occurred. There was a season ticket drive. They sold like 20,000 season tickets or something ridiculous like that. And then, of course, the team never relocated here. So that doesn't mean much. But I don't know. When the people behind the bid seem to be this enthusiastic and this positive about it, it's hard as a fan not to be like, hey, man, we're going to get to go to Halifax and watch a CFL game. Or, like you said, we're going to go to Halifax and watch a Grey Cup. Like, that's cool stuff. That just, in a season that's been pretty good. But there's you know, we're coming up on an offseason where we're going to be talking about CBAs and players leaving and the AAF and the XFL and all this other sorts of stuff. This is a reason for optimism, I think, amongst the CFL fan base.
Yeah, I think so. It's I would nothing would make me happier than a team in Halifax. So I got my fingers crossed.
Wouldn't it be funny if the first game you and I ever attend together for the Ticats, outside of maybe possibly in a couple weeks of the Grey Cup, is us in Halifax watching the Ticats play. Couldn't get it done in Hamilton, couldn't get it done in Edmonton, but you know, we got to go get it done out east.
Yeah, hey man, I'd love that. It would add so much to the league, you know, a balanced schedule. Just a coast to coast league for real.
No more
There's so
crossover.
no more crossover. It would be so beneficial to this league to get a 10th team, and I am a little bit negative on it, but I'd be overjoyed if it happened.
It feels like we're going to live to see it. And if you would have asked me 5 years ago, I probably would have said there's a better
No way.
chance of an NFL team coming to Canada than a CFL team locating out east. So, hey man, anything is possible. Next up, CFL Week, which has been a marquee event for the league in the offseason the last couple of years. First one was in Regina. I believe last year was in Winnipeg. It was announced-ish this week that Ottawa will host the next one, but this is a pretty big but. No one knows if it'll be in 2019 or 2020. And that's all because of the uncertainty around when the new collective bargaining agreement will be agreed to. If there is no agreement by the time CFL Week is set to kick off, it's possible that there will be no CFL Week, which makes sense to me. And if I know anything about CBA negotiations, and I most definitely do not, these things don't tend to be hammered out that far in advance. So I personally think that there's no way there's a CFL week in Ottawa in 2019 and that it will be pushed back to 2020. But this is just another thing. We just kind of touched on the CBA a little earlier. It's another thing that could go by the wayside and what could be a very acrimonious, ugly, and unpredictable offseason before we get a new CBA between the players and the league.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. It doesn't seem like that long ago we were talking about the last CBA agreement, but it's coming up, so it's definitely not going to be a boring off season. I hope that this doesn't drag on. I hope that we can have the Ottawa CFL week in May or whenever it is, and there's an agreement in place, because it's going to be very interesting with these new leagues coming into place. The CFL is really going to have to reward their players. You know, we're going to have to see that salary cap go up. I don't know if the players are stronger, you know, together this time, because it's so hard. Like we talked about it this before in the last CBA, I believe we had the podcast at this time, but it's hard when the veteran players want all the money and they don't want to give any to the younger players, and the younger players just want to play so they can get film and all that stuff. So yeah, I get worried every time a CBA comes up, because the players are going to want more money and the owners aren't going to want to give it to them.
Yeah, it's. I hate this stuff. This is what I hate about sports, because it's and this is a career for these guys. This is a livelihood for these guys, and they deserve to get paid. And it's one of those things where You have to find the right balance because the owners do shell out all the money and they do deserve to make a return on their investment as well. But the players are the ones, like, we don't go to these games because of the owners. The games happen because the owners are there to pay the bills, but we go to watch players. And the league is, the ratings are up this year. If you've been following, Drew Edwards has been writing about ratings all season. They are up fairly high over last season, so that's a good sign. They have stability with a television contract. There's talk of putting a 10th team here. We have stability in some of these marketplaces. Hamilton is turning a profit. We know what they can do in some of the other places. Yes, there are problem areas. This feels like the most stable the CFL has been in a very, 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 very long time. I just hate that we have to talk about this type of stuff because, yeah, I just get a CFL week in Ottawa. Let's celebrate these players, but they want to get everything they can, and I don't blame them for that. And as we've seen, it's going to be a very, I think, acrimonious offseason. How many starting quarterbacks are currently not under contract for next season? When will the league want to get a CBA done before the start of free agency? Because those guys aren't, they've apparently, guys like Mike Riley, Bo Levi Mitchell, Zach Collaros, and the like, have all kind of come together and said, okay, we will collectively not sign new deals until the CBA is done. And could you imagine if guys like that are not under contract come April, come May? Because these things usually drag on until, I think the last one was signed like 2 days after training camp opened. It was like they were negotiating in good faith. So the players said, we're not going to hold out. There's not going to be a strike. The league's like, we're not going to lock you out. We're going to keep going to work, but we're going to hammer this out. We're going to get something. This feels different. This feels like there could be a lockout or there could be a strike because the players deserve their piece of the pie. And I think, again, I don't think the salary cap's going to go up, you know, double. It's not going to be like a $10 million cap, but there needs to be, I think, significant increases for the players to give them what I think they deserve.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, these guys put their bodies on the line. It's a dangerous, dangerous game, probably the most dangerous sport in the world. I guess you could argue otherwise, but it's up there. So for these players, I would like, personally, I don't think this is going to happen, but I'd like the minimum to be around 100,000. I know that's a huge jump and that's not going to happen, but these players deserve to make a good living. I know that the top end players make a very good living in this league, but it'd be nice to see the younger players get a better paycheck, some of the backups, what and whatnot, making money that they can live on. Because you come to Canada, then you gotta, if you live in the States, you gotta go back, and the dollar rate is not good, so you're looking at even less money once you go back home. So I'm hoping that they can boost this salary cap. Not by double. I don't think, like you said, it's not going to be that much, but a good increase would be nice.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more, man. I feel like when you hear things like what Victor Butler was talking about last year, about how he barely makes enough to be able to send any money home and to live in a city like Toronto, the league's got to do something with its pay scale because it's kind of out of whack if that's the case. Let's move on. It's been a while since we've named a bozo or a slapdick, but we're naming one this week, Mike. Remember that hit on Anthony Chiaffe a week ago that he laid on Luke Tasker in that game in Ottawa? The
Of
one
course.
where we sat around and we said, there's no way that this doesn't get fined for Chiaffe, and this is a no-brainer. Well, imagine my surprise, Mike, when the league released its list of player fines and Anthony Chiaffe's name was not on that list. How the hell did this hit escape supplemental discipline, Mike?
I do not understand this one bit. That was up there as, definitely one of the most brutal, dirty hits of the season. Helmet to helmet, launched himself at Luke Tasker. The ball was way over his head. You could tell that he gave up on the play because he couldn't catch the ball. And this jackass comes in and helmet to helmet hits Luke Tasker. It's just unacceptable. And I don't know how the league missed this. And I don't know how they haven't said anything on it either, because that is a finable hit. Definitely. It's, quite frankly, he could have been suspended a game or two as well, because that's just, that's the hit that they want to take out of the game, and then they just completely ignore it. It doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, so I wrote a piece about it for Three Down Nation, and I have been incessantly tweeting about it at both the league's Twitter account and at Commissioner Randy Ambrosi demanding an answer. I didn't think it was as bad. It was a bad hit, and we talked about it should be fined last week. When you slow it down, you see Chiaffe essentially elbow Tasker in the helmet. I you can go to 3 Down Nation right now, find the article, and look at the header picture. It's a freeze frame of where contact is made, and it's forearm, elbow to head. That is a fine. So I've been tweeting this at the commissioner and at the league. I will continue to do this until I'm either blocked by one or both of them, I get an answer for one or both of them, or I get the fortunate instance of running into the commissioner at the Grey Cup, and I will ask him to his face, and I will show him the picture, and I will show him the GIF that I have saved on my phone, and I will say, why was this not subject to a fine? And I will get his answer. It is absolutely ludicrous that this hit went without a fine, Mike. Like, this commissioner has gone on and on, droned on and on about player safety. And then we see crap like this going unpunished. We saw just earlier today, as we record on Monday evening, he released a statement through the league's website about another dirty hit, this one from Odell Willis on Zach Kolaros. And it just makes the fact that they've done nothing and said nothing about Chiafi's hit to me even worse. So because of all this, Randy Ambrosi, who I have a picture of him with me on my Twitter account. I think he has done a very good job as the CFL's commissioner. He is my slapdick of the week this week because he's ultimately the guy that's responsible for this stuff. And the fact that this hit went unpunished with supplementary discipline in the form of a fine or a suspension is absolutely ludicrous.
Is it because he's not a quarterback? Like, I don't understand. Like, to me, the hit on Caleros was terrible. I don't know how that wasn't flagged. I couldn't believe that it wasn't flagged. I couldn't believe that Chris Jones had to throw his challenge flag to get the right call on that. I mean, that's another story in itself. But yeah, to not have any, not even a fine on Chaffee is ridiculous.
It's not even just so the one, like you say, as a quarterback, the hit that the one fine that was handed out this week was to Duke Williams for that hit on that video that went viral where Gary Peters is calling him on and Duke Williams trucks him. That was subject to a fine. And in my piece for 3 Down, I wrote, is the CFL more interested in Twitter justice or actual justice? Did that receive a fine because Gary Peters was humiliated on a worldwide platform? Like, that video has been viewed like 10 million times. Jemele
Yeah, I
Hill,
know.
who used to work for ESPN, put it out there. There's been edits of it where a couple weeks ago, Ohio State played Purdue. Purdue steamrolled them. Someone put the Ohio State logo over Gary Peters' head, the Purdue logo over Duke Williams' head, and like it's become a meme. Now, it's obviously, as is with the internet age, it died out pretty quickly, but it was picked up by other by much more prominent people than just Canadians and CFL fans. And it's like, so that was worthy of a fine. And if you look, it does look like maybe Williams does kind of lower his head to take Peters out, but that's subject to a fine. This isn't. I don't get it, man. I just don't get it.
No, doesn't make any sense. Maybe we'll go to the state of the league this year, and
You
we can
can ask
ask
him.
him.
We will,
Yeah,
absolutely. If I am in the room
let's
with
do it.
Randy Ambrosi, I'm asking him this question. That is exactly what I will ask
It
him.
deserves an answer. It really does,
It
because
does,
I
and
don't. Yeah,
we'll
it's
see.
a
We'll
head
see.
scratcher.
We'll see. Maybe I'll get an answer on Twitter before too long. It's been a few days. I doubt that's going to happen, but we got a month, a little less than a month till Grey Cup, so I'm going to keep up on it. Okay, game preview time, Mike. We have reached, believe it or not, this is crazy to say, the final regular season game of the year. That's it. We are in week 21. Ticats are playing their 18th game of the season, and it means absolutely nothing. The Ticats sitting at 8-9 and doomed to either be in another 500 season or worse, are locked into the number two spot in the East and will host the BC Lions in the East semifinal on November 11th. Hamilton's opponent in this one, the Montreal Alouettes, are 4-13 and have long since been out of the playoff picture. But this is Johnny Manziel's homecoming as the QB the Ticats traded away in July, comes back to play his first game in Hamilton. I don't think I'm breaking any news here, but I suspect this will be a pretty big story, especially coming on the heels of him picking up his first win in the CFL. Mike, with this game being completely meaningless in the standings and for playoff seeding, tell me why we should care about this one.
Well, you should care because, like we talked about in the last game, there was no connection between Mazzoli and the receivers. Well, we obviously know that Luke Tasker, but he can't do everything. So I want to see Terrell Sinkfield, get his footing, put up a big game, have some chemistry with Mazzoli. I want to see Marque McDaniel, do some things for this team. I wouldn't mind if they rested Tasker and even Mike Jones, because they've been in this offense this whole year. They've been playing with Mazzoli this whole year. They know what it's all about, but I want to see something from those receivers on offense.
I'm with you here. What this game, why we should care about this game is you want to go into the playoffs on a win, right? They're going to play the following week against the Lions. They've lost two in a row. They've lost their best player. Getting a victory here, I think, maybe gives them some sort of confidence going into the East semifinal against the Lions. I'm with you. I want to see some cohesion on the offensive side of the football. I want to see Mazzoli and some of these newer receivers build some chemistry. And another thing I want to see in this, Mike, and I'm pretty sure you agree with me, I want to see a dominating defensive performance. The Alouettes are a bad football team. They're 4-13 for a reason. Their quarterback, who was here, the last time these teams played, Hamilton put a 50-burger on him. Manziel threw four interceptions. And yes, he's gotten better as the season's gone on, but look at his numbers. They are not in any way, shape, or form what you would consider good numbers out of a CFL starting quarterback. We saw the Owls in the last game they played against the Argos. They won, I think it was 40-10 was the final. They flip-flop between QBs. They're using this as kind of an early audition for next season. They're still going to play hard, and they're still going to want to win the football game. But last year we saw these two teams play in the final week of the season, and it was a meaningless game for both sides, and Hamilton won 33-0. I want to see something like that. I'm not saying they got to shut them out, but I want to see the Ticats put the boots to the Owls in this one, and I want to see this defense – get interceptions, get sacks, and dominate like we know they can.
Yeah, I mean, the sacks thing is big to me. This defensive line has to get pressure. I don't believe they had any sacks last game. So I'm looking at the defensive line. Hopefully Bro will be, you know, if hopefully Bro's healthy. I don't know if he'll play or not. But if he doesn't play, I want to see the secondary step up without him. Show us that you can perform without your star DB in there. So, yeah, those two things on defense I'm really keeping an eye on, because the linebackers have been incredible, like, lately and throughout the whole season, basically. I want to see things from the defensive line and the secondary.
What do you think we'll see in this one? Do you think we'll see some of those nicked up players? Like, maybe Delvin Bro doesn't play this week because he's, like, again, because the game is essentially meaningless. Do you think maybe they sit him an extra week so he's fully healthy for the finals? Do you think maybe, like you mentioned, Luke Tasker, Mike Jones, you think maybe, like, they can't sit everybody, obviously. No. Like, they have to field a team. Do you think maybe we see, like, maybe they try some different things in this one? Maybe some guys, like, what do you think we'll see from the Ticats against the Owls?
It'd be interesting to, I don't think they're going to do it, but it'd be interesting to see if they put in Courtney Steven at safety to see how he does. Mike Daly's had a pretty good season, but at times, like last game, he gets burned pretty badly. So I think it'd be a wise decision to keep out Delvin Bro. You know, we know what he can do. Just make sure he's healthy going into the playoffs. I'm not sure if they're going to sit Tasker or Mike Jones, because who's going to play? Like, who's going to play in replace of them? I mean, we don't really have that many receivers left. So I think those guys probably play. But I would not be surprised if they sit Bro, just because he's so important to this team.
What about Mazzoli? You think he plays the whole game?
I think Mazzoli gets a half, just to, like we talked about, get some cohesion with these new receivers. But I think it'd be a little risky if he played the whole game.
What do you think about Alex Green? He's another guy taking a bit of a pounding, had some injury issues. Maybe we see the team try to get John White on the game day roster, and maybe spell Green for a bit and not have to rely on her. Maybe we see, you know, Sean Thomas Erlington, or maybe Mercer Timmis get some carries. Like, I feel like I'm with you. I think Mazzoli plays at least a half. It wouldn't shock me if he played the whole game, honestly, especially yeah. if they play well early, like if they get out to, like, they say they score three touchdowns and can get a field goal in the first half. I think we could see Mazzoli probably sit in the second half, but I don't know. June Jones hasn't really been the type to kind of pull Mazzoli, even in games where they were blowing teams out. Like, we talked about the game against Montreal earlier in the year. Mazzoli was in there till like 4 minutes left in the game. It's not really been Jones's style to kind of pull his quarterback, but I feel like this is, if you're going to get other guys some playing time, this feels like the game to do it. Because if they finish 8-10, yeah, we're going to sit here and go, man, another season under 500. We're going to have to hear the endless talk of, oh, well, all the West teams are better than the second team in the East, and they should make the playoffs, and yada, 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 where the East sucks, and all that garbage. But Who you don't care? I don't care about that crap. I care about this team, which has dealt
Well,
with
it's kind of
injury.
true.
It,
It's kind of
I don't
true.
disagree. I'm with you, but I don't care
Yeah,
about that
but it doesn't
because
matter. It doesn't
I
matter. Yeah.
want this team that has dealt with a number of injuries, especially to receivers and star players, to go into the playoff game against the Lions as healthy as they can possibly be. And if that means they lose this game because guys get pulled, so be it.
And they did this, and they should, even if they pull like a lot of their starters in this game, they should still beat the Montreal Alouettes. Okay, they should still get this win, even if Bro sits, if Tasker sits, whoever sits, they should still get this win. We should still be 9-9 going into the playoffs. And now that old 9-9, eh, Josh? It's just, we love it. We just love it in the Tiger Cats. You know, it doesn't matter at this point. Just get into the playoffs, but it would be nice not to have a losing record.
I will agree with you on that, Mike. So before we go, we got to make a little announcement here. Our friends over at the Two and Out CFL podcast are doing a live show at Grey Cup, which I think is super cool. The show will be held on Thursday, November 22nd at 3:30 p.m. at the CKUA building on Jasper Avenue, just across the street from the Shaw Conference Center. Tickets for the event are just $10, with the proceeds from it going to the CFL Fight Fans Fight Cancer group that usually does a benefit thing at Grey Cup every year. You can purchase those tickets if you want to go at twoandoutlive.eventbrite.ca. A live podcast, Mike. Why did we not think of this idea?
Oh, because we're stupid. Two stupid men, you know? Remember
Yeah.
Two Stupid Dogs on
And people
Twitter?
hate us.
Oh, of course, yes. Of
Do you really
course.
want to get
All
pelted
right.
with food by Red Blacks fans?
Well, I mean, no. And who's going to pay $10 to see our stupid asses, you know?
Yeah, just us sitting up there talking about, hey, Ric Flair was at a Ticats game one time.
Yeah.
We just up there, we just woo for an hour and then go home.
Yeah. I think, maybe next year in Calgary.
Yeah,
Yeah, no, yeah, probably not.
I don't think people don't want to actually have to see our faces. They barely want to listen to us speak. They're not going to want to pay to listen to this.
Speak
People
for
don't
yourself,
want to
Josh.
listen
Speak for yourself. I think people would rather look at my face and hear me talk, you
it for free.
know?
I do think this is super cool though, and if you have a chance to go, Travis and Brazilian Tire, great. That show is awesome. I think if you're free at the time, head on over there, listen to
When is it,
them,
the
have some
Saturday?
fun. It's Thursday.
Oh, Thursday. Okay.
Thursday the 22nd, three it get doors open at 3 o'clock. The show's gonna start at 3:30. It's gonna go for about an hour. I don't know. I think it'll be super fun, super cool. I say go do it. It's weird because I was like, oh, 3:30 in the afternoon. I'm Eastern time, but that'll be 5:30 here. I feel like I'm gonna be all messed up with the time when I'm out there.
It'll just take you a day or two, Josh. You'll be all
But
right.
the Grey Cup starts at 4 or 4:30, whatever it is. That's weird to me. That's awesome,
It
but
is
that's weird.
strange. Listen, I'm still not used to like 5 o'clock Eastern games, you know? It's like 5 o'clock. I haven't even ate supper yet. I was so used to the 7 o'clock, you know, the Eastern time zone, or even 8 o'clock because I lived in PEI for a while, but 5 o'clock is still weird to me.
Yeah, it's like those NFL games they play at like 9:30 in the morning. It's like, man, if you lived in
Yeah.
BC to watch at a 1 o'clock game that starts at 10, that's I mean, it's awesome because breakfast and watching football, that'd be the best. But yeah, it's gonna, I don't know, for a couple of days out there, you're gonna hear me go, well, it's this time, but it's really this time. You're gonna want to slap me in the face.
Yeah, well, I'll give you the boot.
All right, so that was Podski Wee Wee for this week. I am Josh Smith.
Now, Mike Graham, woo!
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.